5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Brewski, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
On Sunday, December 15th of 2025, Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle, were found stabbed to death in their Brentwood home. Their 32-year-old son, Nick, has been charged with the murder, but this wasn't a family caught off guard by a secret they didn't know existed. Rob and Michelle Reiner had been fighting to save their son for 18 years. They had sent him to rehab 17 times, starting when he was 15 years old. They made a movie together about, his addiction. They let him live in their guest house so they could watch over him. And according to family resources, they brought him to Conan O'Brien's Christmas party the night before their death, specifically to keep an eye on him. This is a case about what happens when parents do everything society tells them to do and it still ends in violence. Siobhan Scott is a psychotherapist with over 30 years of experience working with families in crisis. There's so much to this that I want to get into. It's such a horrible, tragic story, but if there's anything good that's coming out of this, it's making people talk about the system and the crisis state that it is in for those of us in the world that have had people like this in our lives, maybe have people like this in our lives, and trying to navigate the world to help them and also navigate boundaries with them and the few options that it gives a family once it seems all options have been exhausted. Siobhan, thank you for being here. When you look at the Reiner case, this is a family that spent 2 decades trying to intervene. 17 rehab stays, constant supervision, all the money in the world to do anything, but none of it helped. What does this tell you about the limitations of parental effort intervention effort from anyone, really, when someone that they love, when addiction and mental illnesses reach a certain threshold?
It's very hard to treat co-occurring disorders. That's probably the hardest thing. So you're not dealing just with addiction, which is hard enough in itself, but you're dealing with, and you know, we don't know his medical history at this point, mm-hmm. but in all likelihood, a severe psychiatric illness, which could have been spurred by the addiction, you know, because it's hard to know which came first, chicken or egg. But it's very common for people to have co-occurring disorders. And unfortunately, rehab, while it helps a lot of people, it does not help everybody. And there are these cases, I've seen them among some of my good friends who have raised kids, gave them wonderful upbringings, and then some kind of mental health condition. They got into drugs, particularly things like meth. And you can't save everybody. You just can't save them. So it's absolutely shattering for families because, you know, most of us who are parents, we'd give our lives for our kids in a heartbeat. Yeah. We would do anything for them. And it's just absolutely devastating to have a child that you can't help.
And I've been listening to a lot of morning show people, let's put it that way, that know the Reiners, that actually have gone over and had dinner and made sandwiches standing in their kitchen and things. They're lovely parents. They did everything for their kids. This is not a parental failure.
No.
They did everything. There's nothing they could have done.
Yeah. And it also reinforces, which I think is a really important message, that not all human behavioral problems are caused by trauma. It's not all caused by bad parenting. There are people who just got a nasty combination of genetics, and you combine that with other factors like, you know, particularly certain kinds of drugs, and sometimes young in life, you've just got a damaged brain, and it's pure biology.
I want to talk about that a little bit. I mean, there's a lot of things I want to get to. I want to talk about the system itself, of how they really were left with little to no options other than babysitting their adult 32-year-old son, basically, and hoping for the best. But before we get to that part of the conversation, I want to talk about what we've heard from Nick, of what he said in past interviews about his addiction, about his mental illness, so we can try to understand that a little bit better. And in no way does this, justify anything, but it's just, if we can try to understand what's going on from another person's prism, the better off anyone is going to be. Nick said in interviews that his drug use was never really about the drugs, the way he described it. It was about killing the noise. So from a clinical perspective, when someone says that, when that's what how they're expressing their relationship with the substance, what does that statement reveal about what was likely happening beneath the addiction itself?
It sure speaks to me of psychosis, because auditory hallucinations are one of the markers of psychotic disorder, which means the brain is not working in some way. And some people experience auditory hallucinations as noise. You know, we often think of hearing voices, and most of the time people who are psychotic do at some point hear voices, but they also can hear all kinds of strange sounds. And that's what the noise made me think of, that he was having hallucinations, which is incredibly uncomfortable for people. And they do look for ways to stop it.
Let me interrupt for just a second. Refresh my memory. Was Koberger concerned about, I mean, I remember something about noise with him. Was that kind of a similar vein?
Koberger was visual snow, and that's not associated with psychosis. Absolutely no evidence at all that Koberger has ever had psychosis. He's got psychopathy, and that can confuse people. Psychopath versus psychotic. And I'm often explaining to very educated people that psychosis is a sign of a broken brain. And psychopath, that's a personality type. That's the person who has no conscience. And so psychopath is who you are. Doesn't mean you have an illness, but psychosis is clearly you have a normal person and then something happens to their brain, something goes wrong. And so that's a mental illness versus a personality disorder. So they're looked at very differently legally. And in court, being a psychopath does not get you out. I mean, that's not, a reason that you're found not guilty by reason of insanity, whereas psychosis is. And when people are found not guilty by reason of insanity, it's because they have that brain illness.
Thank you for that.
I think a lot of people are seeing this story, whether they liked Rob Reiner or not, and in finding a relation to it in some way, shape, or form, whether it's direct, whether they've had their own child, or they've seen a friend or a family member or a niece or a nephew. I mean, I can think of several in my life. I don't have a child that has gone through any of this, thank God. But I can think of other family members and extended family where there's been parents that have gone down this same sort of road. Some have ended better than others. I can't say there's ever been like a super happy ending for anything. And some have not. The frustration here that the Reiners were going through, Michelle Reiner had been confiding in friends that Nick's mental health was deteriorating in recent weeks and that they'd, they tried everything. That was the quote. What happens psychologically to parents or caregivers who reach that point of exhaustion while still living in proximity to the volatile adult child?
It just devastates them. You know, parents live in fight or flight for years or decades, and it affects their own mental health. And so I've worked with so many families in therapy who are trying everything and they're becoming so stressed. You know, they're symptomatic because of it. One of my best friends, and I watched her raise her son. She was a marvelous mother. And at 18, he went to college and started drinking. And he did not have the mental illness piece. It was strictly alcoholism. But she spent a decade bailing him out of jail because he would get aggressive when drunk. And he got to the point he was drunk 24/7. He was drinking all the time. And she, tried putting him in rehab. She hired mortaged her house to hire lawyers to get him out of jail. And she lived in just this state of constant anxiety. And at 30, he was found dead in a flea bag motel and had drank himself to death. And as awful as that was, she called me crying right after the body was found. But she said, about a week later, she said, in a way, I feel like I'm normal for the first time, even though I'll grieve him forever. But I'm not waiting for that phone to ring. And that was just a nightmare. It alters their lives completely.
It's this constant monster that is just around every corner. Every time the phone buzzes, is that the call? Is that the text?
Exactly.
I can't imagine living like that.
It's awesome.
One of the things that's being brought up, because everybody's looking at the timeline. What took place here? What caused this? What triggered this? And they're talking about Conan O'Brien's Christmas party, which, one would think would be a happy, jovial time. And it probably was for most people other than Nick. The way it's been described is kind of a suit and tie affair, dresses, all that. He shows up in a hoodie and starts interrupting conversations. One of the stories that's come out is that he tried to interrupt a private conversation amongst Bill Hader of SNL fame and several others, and was told, hey, this is a private conversation, buddy. Thank you, but, it's private. And he stood there staring at several people. Just bizarre behavior. I mean, very addict-like behavior, if you're to look at it. I made this point last night on social media because everybody's going, well, what did Bill say? How did he treat? Like, it doesn't matter. And correct me if I'm wrong. In my estimation here, He could have been talking to Snuckles the cat. It doesn't matter who he interacted was. It doesn't matter what the interaction was. If this guy was looking for a fight, he was going to find a fight. And he was trying to find it in any way, shape, or form that he could. We see this sort of thing play out quite often with addicts. And then quite often after some sort of this public issue or some sort of a public incident, things escalate even more. That appears to be what took place here. Give us some insight into that. And that sort of acting out in front of all these people, not the time or place to be acting this, not that there ever really is, but it wasn't, you know, a bunch of people getting high down by the river. It was a black tie affair, and this is the way he's acting. What does that tell you about his mental state and about what anybody could have possibly done in that moment, if anything?
He certainly could have also been experiencing paranoid delusional thinking, which makes people aggressive. And they look for a fight because they're misinterpreting everything in their environment. And they may think people are talking about them or making them feel threatened in some way. So they get aggressive. They're dangerous when that's happening. And so he should have ideally, and maybe they tried and maybe they just couldn't make it happen, had a psychiatric evaluation when he's displaying behavior like that. And he definitely should not have been around, you know, people in a social setting. That was just not going to work. And trying to monitor him as parents. This is exactly why so many folks like this end up murdering their parents. And I've seen many of those cases. It's because the parents are trying to set limits on them. They're trying to say, no, I need you to take your medication, or I need you to, you know, stop what you're talking about or whatever. And so the parents are interfering with what their goal is at that time. And I've seen horror stories. There was a case in the mental health clinic I used to work in where a woman who had been very aggressive, had attacked patients, coming into the clinic, sitting in our waiting room, was having paranoid delusions about Satan and attacked other people in the waiting room who were also patients there. And then it took, you know, like 12 of our staff to run out and try to restrain them and get the police out there. And that one particular person who was a woman ended up beheading her mother shortly thereafter. So these, and that's not the only thing, but that was one of the most dramatic cases where I had personal contact with someone who went on to do something like this. And so often it is the parents who are in danger because often they have this adult child living in the home with them, and then they're trying to give them some kind of structure, trying to do some kind of, you know, molding and, you know, getting them to comply, and it can get very dangerous.
Obviously. So Rob had even once said that he'd rather have Nick alive and hating him than dead and on the streets. And I think almost any parent would feel that way. Yeah. That line made it into the film that they had together. How does that kind of desperate parental love, the willingness to be the villain to keep someone alive, how does that sometimes create dynamics that ultimately make the situation more dangerous when you're trying to make it less dangerous?
Yeah, because it sets up this control where the parents are, you know, in the position of trying to mold the behavior and manage the behavior. And the person who's ill, if they're paranoid, they take it as aggression and they respond in kind. And it's, I think, one of those things, the hardest thing to talk with about parents is sometimes there's really nothing you can do but save yourselves here. You have tried everything. You have, you know, given and given and given, and your life is truly in danger now. And that's hard for parents to hear. They don't want to believe that of their kid. It just shatters their sense of, you know, the family that they've always tried to create.
One of the things that I've noticed in our YouTube comment section is we have a lot of people who, and Tony, you mentioned this, who are identifying with pretty much the same circumstances here. You know, they're not celebrities and they don't have unlimited resources, but they've got a addicted family member either in their home or somebody that they care about. And what I'm seeing is a lot of people commenting about this story has made them a little bit afraid. They've had that underlying fear, but now they've seen it play out and it's constantly in their face. Is there something that you can tell them, especially with the holiday season? You know, it's a stressful time. You're going to be seeing those family members. How do you get through this time period when you're dealing with somebody that now you're looking at as, wow, they have the potential to kill me?
Yeah. This is, I think, the place where therapy can help the family members problem solve. And again, I always say that going to therapy for support does not mean you have a mental health condition. A lot of people feel like, well, I'm not the one with the mental health condition. I don't need to go to therapy. But really, that's where the power is sometimes, is for the family members to seek support. Yeah. There's also a wonderful organization that's a national found everywhere, NAMI, N-A-M-I, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. And that's a wonderful resource of support for parents and problem solving. And and you know, worst case scenario, if you can call your local community mental health crisis line for problem solving, and if you're feeling like, you know, this is getting dangerous, make that call to a crisis line, but definitely don't go it alone.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very important because you're exactly right. A lot of people will go, I'm not the one with the mental health. You're right. You're not. You're going to end up with one if you don't get help and support. Not necessarily you're not going to repeat the path of the person you're trying to help, but you're going to end up with some scars through this. So learning how to deal with those, cope with those, navigate your way through those is so important for anyone that has an addict in their life that they're trying to help, that they're doing. I mean, yeah, the folks that go to Al-Anon are not the alcoholics. That's why you have support groups for those folks, because they need it just as much as the people who are suffering with the addiction to try and navigate the world around them. What are parents supposed to do when their adult child is spiraling and won't accept help? That's the big question here. In the United States, you can't force a competent adult into treatment against their will in most circumstances. Yep. You can't commit someone just because you believe they're dangerous. You can watch them deteriorate. You can offer resources. You can beg, but you cannot make them accept help. Rob and Michelle Reiner lived inside that paradox for 18 years. Siobhan Scott is with us to help us break all this down, psychotherapist and author. And I think that to me, and if there's any silver lining in this in terms of awareness and understanding, is opening people's eyes up to this paradox. In the United States, the way it currently is set up, if the mentally ill person or addict or all of the above wants to get the help, will accept the treatment, and you have the money and you have the resources to do it, then yes, they can get it. But just the money and the resources don't cut it. They have to want it. Yes, you can get them to a 72-hour hold. Yes, you can get them to the temporary this or that. But there's very little you can do to force compliance in terms of getting the help that they actually need. And if they don't, your option is being their babysitter or let them go die on the streets and hope maybe they come back. That's where the Reiners were. And it seems they've tried all of the above. Under the current law, what can parents actually do when an adult child is showing signs of serious mental deterioration and potential violence but refuses treatment? Where does their legal authority end?
Yeah, you're right. They really have no legal authority. I think one of the things that I've seen happen, and I encourage parents, if there's threatening behavior, anything that you would not accept from a stranger, you would call 911, call 911. If and it doesn't matter if it's your child, if you're being threatened and you see this escalation in your home, sometimes the best thing to do is get them in the criminal justice system. And sometimes if they're locked up, well, they can at least get some, you know, if it's alcohol or drugs, they're not hopefully getting access to it when they're locked up. But sometimes then the court will put them in a mental health facility, you know, a forensic treatment program. And then they can get stabilized. Sometimes if they're psychotic, get the psychiatric medication. And I've seen cases where that was the kindest thing the family did, was make that call to 911. And if it's a situation that dangerousness can be determined and they can be arrested for doing something. But yeah, often it has to get really bad before that happens. But people hate to think of their kid locked up in jail, but sometimes that's the best you can do.
Well, and how much of that plays in as a factor where one is sitting here thinking, well, they're bad, but they're not that bad.
Right.
Until they actually are that bad. Then it's far too late. But if someone is showing signs of this type of behavior, you have to assume that, yes, it can go that bad. It is in their wheelhouse. They may not have exercised it yet, but it's there.
Yeah. It's one of those things. If you have other family members in the home, if you're raising other kids, I've seen the sibling of a very threatening older brother who was quite psychotic. Parents were doing everything to try to save him, keeping him in the home. And he ended up traumatizing and assaulting his little sister, who then had PTSD and was in therapy for it 20 years later because of what she had gone through living with this mentally ill brother. And I think parents sometimes make the mistake of, you know, I think hope can be a good thing, but sometimes they're clinging to unrealistic hope and they think there's going to be a magic fix for this stuff. And I promise you, talk therapy is not enough. You know, just saying, well, there's going to be some therapist that comes along with a magical solution that's going to fix this really, really complicated problem. And so sometimes getting them out of the home and learning how to set more boundaries just around basic safety is something that needs to happen.
What concerns me is we've seen cases where there's a mental issue going on in the home and law enforcement comes in, and I'm not bashing law enforcement, but I don't feel that they're equipped to deal with this situation. So I wonder if that's a big fear too, that not only do I not want my family member now in the criminal justice system, but am I concerned that they're going to get shot because they appear to be threatening? They appear to be doing something that warrants a gun being pointed at them.
Yeah, no, you nailed it. That's very, very true. And there have been so many of those cases that happen. Yeah. When I was digging into the research on police shootings a few years ago, when we had so much controversy going on about police shooting, particularly people of color, 50% of police shootings involve a person who's in an acute mental health crisis, and they're not able to respond to the law enforcement orders. Police aren't trained how to handle it. And so what we're seeing increasingly, which is happening here in my city in Portland, Oregon, and we want to see it funded, we want to see it continue, is pairing mental health folks with police who go out together in hopes that the mental health people can do more to de-escalate the situation and prevent some of these shootings that really the person is just unable to comply with the order.
I want to talk about something that Rob Reiner had said in 2015 when he made that movie with his son. I had a take on it, but I'm really curious to get your take on it from a professional opinion. He had said that they listened to the experts instead of listening to their son when he said the treatment wasn't working. And he said that they should have been listening to their son all along, but they were fooled by the system and the people that had diplomas on their walls that I found. Looking, obviously, it's easy to Monday morning quarterback this, but look, the addicted person is always going to try and make you go down their path. And they're going to try and make you think that everybody, the professionals, they're all wrong. The experts are wrong. They're wrong. I'm the one to believe. Dad, don't you love me? Don't you care about me after the 17 times in rehab that I still am not getting the help that I need for? They're going to manipulate you. It's insidious. I mean, it almost feels evil, but it's part of the addiction. But when we look at this retrospectively, and it's not to speak ill of the dead, they completely bamboozled the family. He completely bamboozled that family. He bamboozled Rob and his wife into thinking that it was them. He made them feel guilty about trying to get help for their son, about putting him into rehab. He went and made a movie where the villain is the dad that's trying to get the son help, and the hero in the movie is the addict. Yeah. I mean, it's really spooky, but this is how it works with addicts. So what do you say to that statement that Rob had made back then, in his view of where he should have been putting, the eggs in his basket?
Yeah, that's a conversation I would love to have been able to have with him. What was his perception at the time of the advice that he had been given by professionals? And you're right. That manipulative ability of addicts is just uncanny, how they know how to push the parental buttons. And parents, loving good parents, blame themselves. They always blame themselves. They always think, well, what could I have done differently? You know, and they think back onto, but when he was a little boy and he was so sweet and so cute, and, you know, they always have those memories, and then they go into what did we do wrong and what could we have done differently? An addict will play on that in order to get their way. I would also like to see that film. I don't know if it's available anywhere.
I'm sure it is somewhere.
I've not seen it. About it.
I am curious as well. I mean, there were so many things. And on a side note, you know, when this all went down, I'm like, oh, I haven't seen that one of his yet, of this movie. That I want to see the new Spinal Tap. I haven't. that looks interesting to watch, the mockumentary. If a family came to you today, Siobhan, in the same sort of position that the Reiners were in, an adult child with a long history of addiction, mental instability, possible violence, refusing help, because I know there's people out there listening in this exact position right now, what would you honestly tell them about their options?
You know, it depends on the community they're in. And this varies not only state to state, it varies county to county. And when I worked, I've worked so many different crisis jobs, including the one where you go out with the police. You know, I did that for a while. I took crisis calls in the community mental health. You probably need to find what's available in your community and call the crisis line today, you know, and get somebody on the phone that can go over with you. These are the resources that we have available here. We are supposed to have something called assisted outpatient treatment, where there are therapists or social workers who try to engage people in treatment. I was looking up the laws on that. That's not a criminal, you know, people aren't criminally mandated into it, but it's a civil thing. So you have to have some degree of buy-in. But some communities have a fairly robust assisted outpatient treatment program where you may be able to connect your loved one with a person who can, you know, try to get them in different housing or try to get them on meds or try to get them in a sober living situation. Other communities don't have it. And that's one of the problems in our country. It's very piecemeal. So it's really hard to know how to advise without knowing what's available where you're at. And I think particularly in the more rural areas, there may not be anything functional. Yeah.
You know, cost is huge too.
Cost is huge for those things. And the cost falls to the counties, I think, often for that. And so in a large urban area, there probably are more resources versus a small rural community.
And at the end of the day, everybody is responsible for themselves. Yeah. And you can go to the nth degree, you'll end up hurting yourself, you'll end up, people end up not killing themselves. And I'm not saying like taking a gun, but just, you know, breaking themselves down so much, trying to help the people that they love.
100%.
And then at the end of the day, then the addict is still alive.
Yeah.
That's the sad and scary part of all this. Boundaries play such an important role. And it's easy to say this from someone who doesn't have the addict child, because if you have the addict child, there you're saying there are no bounds. And I get that. There really aren't when it's your kid. But there does need to be at some point, not just for your own well-being, but for their own well-being, their well-being. And if those boundaries don't exist, you're not going to get anywhere. How important are boundaries, and how important is it that at some point the caregiver, if it's the parent in this sort of a situation, that there is a point at somewhere down this line where they say, there's nothing else I can do for
you. You make sure they know what the resources are. You call the police if they're threatening, but I'm not a big believer in having them live in your home, you know, somebody who's active in an addiction, and certainly if they're mentally ill and having, you know, hallucinations and paranoia, they're potentially dangerous. Yeah. And I think you can give resources and say, here are the numbers you call if you want that assisted outpatient treatment. And if you don't want it, you're on your own. And you need to stay away. We're not going to be babysitting you, because it is important that, I think you go back to what you said, everybody's responsible for themselves, and your adult child can ruin your life. And yes, they can put you in a premature grave, and in worst case scenario, they may attack you or kill you. And
so being on the outside of that, you know, obviously this is amazing advice, but being on the outside, now we've got somebody who's going to end up possibly unhoused and, you know, in the throes of psychosis here. Yeah. So now it becomes our problem. And not saying that it, you know, it sounds really cold what I'm saying, but the problem just keeps getting kicked down the road.
It gets kicked down the road. Yeah. And what some communities do, I hear Idaho sends them all to Portland. When they find people on the street, they'll say, is there another city where you'd rather be? Or do you have a relative somewhere in the country? And then they buy them a bus ticket and put them on the bus and just, you know, we talk about passing the buck.
Yeah.
And so then they end up on the street in Portland, you know, or in Florida where they had an uncle who doesn't want them. And so it really is passing them around. Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine if we had facilities where we put people like this and committed them, and they didn't have a choice to get in or out because they're a danger to themselves or others. Imagine if we had that. Oh, we did, and we got rid of it a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And depending on the diagnosis that ultimately comes up for Nick Reiner, he may end up in a locked facility for the rest of his life, but not a prison. Because if he does have a psychotic disorder, I don't think prison is the right place. I think being in a, you know, forensic mental health institution. But it could be that he needed to be there a long time ago. And sometimes that's the best outcome.
The thing is, the only way that he would be there is if he did something horrible.
Yeah.
And that's the scary, horrible part about all of this.
Yeah.
It's always reactionary, not preventative. And I mean, that the whole conversation of institutions and all that, you know, obviously the thing I see a lot is, oh, well, there was all these horrible. Yes, there was. It wasn't the greatest system on earth. But in 2025, could we look back 40 years and go, how can we improve on this? How can we make this actually work in a humane, you know, loving way where we are taking care of people, and it didn't turn into the cropsy, you know, nightmare that was the mental health system of the 1950s, 60s, and everything prior.
Right.
We can do better.
We just don't do it. Yeah.
We just don't.
Yeah. I have another agency that I'm going to recommend. I haven't contacted them personally myself. I'm going to do that, but I have been reading about their work. It's called the Treatment Advocacy Center, TAC, and they're fighting for systemic change. And I don't think it's a huge organization, but it looks like a really important organization, and they've got a website and a significant web presence, and they are trying to look at what can we do legislatively to do better, and, you know, making some big goals there. So that's someone else that may be a good guest for the show.
And is it okay at this point? There was somebody asking for some resources in our chat, and I just want to point out what you had pointed out before. Is it NAMI, N-A-M-I?
NAMI, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, and they're a wonderful organization. They have classes for families and for parents, support groups, and it's all free. And they're a nonprofit organization. So I highly recommend NAMI. Of course, if you're dealing with a straight substance abuse issue, there's Al-Anon, also wonderful for families. They save lives. And of course, for the person, if somebody's watching that's struggling with addiction, expensive rehab is out of the reach for a lot of people, but AA has saved countless lives and is in every community. So, and your community mental health, you know, every community has, they may not be well-funded, they may not be big, but they've got a crisis and a resource line. So look in your own county mental health system.
Perfect. Thank you.
Let's move on to another case here that also involves mental health. A Kentucky sheriff walked into a judge's chambers, locked the doors, and fired 9 rounds into the man that he'd known for years. That part was caught on camera. But according to newly filed civil lawsuit documents, the 2 weeks leading up to that moment looked like a textbook mental health crisis. And almost everyone around Mickey Stein saw it happening. Rapid weight loss, days without sleep, paranoid claims that unnamed people were threatening his family. And the day of the shooting, witnesses say he was making phone calls trying to reach his grandmother, who'd been dead for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So we talk about warning signs, about intervention, about what happens when someone spirals towards violence in plain sight. This case hands us a brutal case study. Psychotherapist Siobhan Scott is here with us to help break all this down. The court documents describe Steins as experiencing severe insomnia, the rapid weight loss, extreme paranoia, and the very strange behavior. In the 2 weeks prior to the shooting, from a clinical standpoint, what is that constellation of symptoms suggest to you might be happening?
Acute psychotic mania. It is classic mania. And this can happen in people who are typically high functioning. They're not, you know, the low functioning person with schizophrenia, you know, it can come on quickly. There may have been a history of it or there may not have been. Did he have the classic bipolar disorder with episodes of depression? And sometimes the depression can be relatively mild, but that would be my guess, because the insomnia, the weight loss, the paranoia, the psychotic thinking, the disorganized behavior, this guy needed to be in the hospital. He needed to be psychiatrically hospitalized. And I can't imagine that any trained mental health person would not have seen this and flagged it and said, we need to get him inpatient. Well,
and here's what took place, allegedly. According to the folks around him, there had been a lot of people that were noticing this. One of the attorneys in the courthouse there even contacted their bar association going, what do I do with this sheriff? There's something's not right going on here. Some of his staff allegedly even went with him to his general practitioner. He said, I'll go to the doctor. You know, as everybody says when someone, let me go to the doctor. Then you go to your general care physician, who's not remotely qualified in most cases to be delving out mental health advice. But people don't know this. This is just like kind of a common misconception, amazingly, but it is. And then if you're not going to your general care physician, and when they're asking you, you know, are you having psychotic delusions? Are you doing this? Are you depressed? Are you anxious? And your answer is no to every single one of those things. Mm-hmm. It's not a whole lot one can do. Now, is there?
I would love to live in a world where physicians all had more training in how to spot mental health disorders. And it's another important thing, you know, when he went to the doctor, did he just go in alone?
Yeah.
Because you're right. He's not going to necessarily self-report how bizarre his behavior is.
You might even be aware of it because
he's not aware. He's thinking he's fine. And so this is where I always encourage people who are noticing the behavior, make sure you talk to the doctor. You give the information. Even if they can't, because of HIPAA, they can't talk to you back, you can always call and say, you know, the sheriff is coming in. Let me give you a heads up on what has been happening. So that can cue the doctor, like, oh, we do need to call the mental health crisis folks here, because this is just a tragedy, absolute tragedy, because Sheriff Steins was probably a great guy until he lost his mind here. Now, the other thing I'll throw out, this kind of crisis can also happen. We see a lot of it with meth use. And so a person who has a very good brain can do a bunch of meth and they can have a manic, terrible paranoid manic psychotic episode. I doubt that that's what happened here because I've also seen it happen in just people where something goes wrong biologically and this is what happens. But it's something that you definitely need a professional to get their eyes on them right away and get them in a safe place and definitely get the guns away from them.
Well, and I was just going to say, I feel like law enforcement has an even higher responsibility. You've got people who have weapons in their hands. Yes. If you're seeing something like this, something needs to be done immediately for everybody's safety.
Definitely.
I want to talk about, you had mentioned Matthews, and again, that's not part of the case or anything like that. I mean, it's an observation, you know, of certainly of this sort of behavior. But what about other triggering events, stressors, anxiety? What we do know of what was going on in this man's life was that there had been depositions that were being given in another case involving improper, improprietary, use of the judge's chambers. There was allegations of sexual improprieties, of SA, of all sort, not necessarily against the judge directly or the sheriff, but people within their ecosystem, people that they worked with, people that they were in charge of. One of Mickey Stein's subordinates had been charged with this. And there's been a lot of allegations swirling that there was a lot of shady sexual shit going on in that court with some of those people. I'm not saying that these people were involved, but it seemed to be quite a stressful moment, to put it lightly, in these people's lives. And it all seemed, the behavior seemed to be stemming out of those depositions and out of being put on the spot to try and take accountability or say what he knew about those sort of situations. Could things like that, if these sort of things are coming to light, could that trigger an episode or something like this where he's calling his dead grandma?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, because yes, it's not common, but in somebody who's got, let's say, the biological vulnerability, they've got a sensitivity in their neurobiology to this kind of thing, extreme stress can set off a manic episode. So it's possible that was one factor, because a lot of times it's not just one thing. You've got several things all together. The other thing that can set it off for people with this tendency is international travel and time zone changes can set it off. We also see more of this kind of thing happen in summer. And so that's an area of research that, is it something about the change of seasons where you'll see more people have breaks, psychotic breaks like this? So I think there are a lot of environmental factors that are unique and different for every person. But I have a client who's a bipolar, and she's very, very stable and on all the right medications and lives an effective life. You know, she functions well. But if they take a trip and she goes through a time zone change, she has learned she has to increase her medication because it can trigger a manic episode on vacation. And so this is the fascinating thing about the brain, is how it can go haywire. And
just theoretically speaking here, because this is a whole, all of those allegations are out in the ether. Let's just for example, let's say the following scenario is true. And I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying, if you knew that there was some sexual improprieties going on within your office, maybe you had something to do with it. maybe some shit was going to come out on you or someone very close to you in the very near future that was going to completely upend, destroy, ruin your life, reputation, and everything around you. That might be one of the biggest stressors anyone could ever feel in their lives, which I would think would be somewhat of a triggering factor. When I'm looking at this case as a whole, that's kind of what I'm seeing. I mean, again, we don't know all those. There's so many allegations there, and that can be litigated in its own world. But if that is the impetus of all of this, is all this coming out, and then this is what triggered this, it kind of makes for the perfect storm in some cases.
Yeah, it is a perfect storm. It can definitely be from an extreme stressor. And so that's a certainly plausible explanation. Another time that we see it happen a lot is in boot camp for young men who maybe have no symptoms of mental health problems, but they've got some vulnerability. They're sensitive and they're in boot camp, and all of a sudden, because of the lack of sleep and the intense pressure they're under, that's a high risk time, and so they can have a psychotic break.
Don't all minds have a breaking point at some place? I mean, under a certain amount of stress, couldn't any of us break to the point of thinking we're going to call our dead grandmother? I mean, if you're under, I can't imagine, being in the situation that Steins might have been in, if all that is true, and then trying to function in any way, shape, or form. I just wonder, you know, once one gets to that point, then things start going haywire. Are there different levels of the delusions here, of the psychotic, behavior that was going on? Because you have the part where he's talking about, you know, being paranoid for the safety of his wife and children, having his wife put on a bulletproof vest, that sort of stuff. Okay, that's paranoia. That's a lot of anxiety there. But then you go to calling dead people. That seems to be like another level.
It is another level. And I think all humans have breaking points when it comes to how much stress can we take. And all of us on this show have probably had a point where we felt like I'm cracking here, you know, just because stress affects people. That's normal. And that's not really a mental health condition in any way, although it can feel like it at the time. But what people usually experience, people who don't have a vulnerability to psychosis, usually experience tearfulness. They can't get out of bed. They go into a major depression. They start panic attacks are very, very common. When we say somebody's having a nervous breakdown, a lot of times it's crying. They can't stop, panic attacks. And, you know, I often say going through grief, people are tearful. But if you're crying for 3 days, straight and you can't stop, you know, you're having a mental health crisis. And so going into psychosis is, I don't think, something that everybody does. And again, it may mean they've never had that symptom before. So you don't know, do you have a vulnerability to that?
Well, and it doesn't help to have people, you know, saying, snap out of it, you know, deal with it. What do you do if you are in that situation? What do you do? Maybe you've had something really stressful happen and you're going down that path. What do you do?
Yeah. That's where you call someone like me. If you can't get in to see a therapist right away, again, going back to the community mental health crisis line, give them a call. There's the national, is it 911, the national, you know, psychiatric support.
Well, the 988.
988, thank you. 911. Yeah, you don't have to. Although you can call 911, but call 988 if it's just an emotional kind of thing. Because sometimes just having someone to vent to and someone to talk about the stress can de-escalate it a lot. And so call the helpline. The other thing people can do if let's say, you know, I've seen this many times, they're hyperventilating, they're shaking, they feel like they're having a heart attack, you can go into an emergency room and emergency room staff are supposed to be trained how to, you know, screen for a mental health emergency, get the social worker in to talk to someone and try to do referrals for ongoing support. If there's a local psychiatric hospital that has any openings that you can get somebody in, often they go from an emergency room into an inpatient psychiatric facility if they're really, really, you know, in bad shape. So that's sort of, you know, kind of the chain that you can follow. If it's an acute emergency and you feel like the hotline isn't enough, because panic attacks are what really scare people. They think they're having a heart attack. And so the hospital emergency room, they can rule that out really quickly until you know it's a panic attack. But, you know, that's probably the fastest route.
Yeah. Well, there's so much with this case. There's so much with all of this. There's a civil suit that's been. We're learning a lot of these facts because of the civil suit, not the actual criminal trial that's coming up. A civil suit that's been filed by the widow of the judge against three of the staffers of the sheriff, basically stating, well, they should have warned the judge. And it sounds like they did everything they could. I mean, it really sounds like everybody saw something, said something. I get, you know, people want to find a villain here. People want to find, well, this could have been done. I don't know that this is the right route to take, to be suing staff members that, you know, for their superior when they were saying, hey, something's off here. They only have so much that they could actually legally do as well without putting themselves in some sort of danger.
And it's also complicated by the fact that he was the superior.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, he was the boss. He had the power. And I think if your supervisor, the sheriff, is the one that you're having to figure out how in the world do we navigate this, that's another layer of complexity for these people. And it does sound like they tried.
And navigate it with knowledge of all these allegations that are flowing around this big ball of wrong, of this sort of impropriety, that sort of impropriety, again, allegations, but all pieces that would be going through someone's mind of what do I say? What do I do? Other than he seems off. There's some, they're not his handler. They're not his babysitter. Mm-hmm. They don't need to go to every single person he's about to interact with and go, hey, by the way, he holds a gun. He has the potential to shoot you.
Exactly.
I think everybody kind of knows that. And then if they're going to sit around and wait for that, that's up to them. But the reality is nobody knew he was going to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't think he knew he was going to do this probably until that moment.
It was very, very impulsive on his part. Yeah,
they had lunch together. I mean, everything seemed fine. And all of a sudden, guess what I'm going to do? Mm-hmm. The way it unfolded, it just screams that this was not something that was planned.
It seems like a bizarre lawsuit. I don't even know what to make of it. I mean, I can't imagine being the widow going through this shit. I can't imagine being the widow going through this shit and also hearing these allegations about my husband either floating around and trying to process that and go, is this real? He's gone. Mm-hmm. Can't answer for it. And you're just left with the, who do I believe? You know, that's that I can't imagine. So I don't want to be too harsh on her. I get everybody's trying to look for a villain here, but I don't think this is the path, in my opinion, in that route. We'll keep watching this. The trial is looking to be 2026. We'll follow it as it gets closer. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, thank you so much for being on and giving us your insight. As always, her book, Nightbird, available wherever books are sold. And get it. If you go right now to Amazon or whatever, you can probably get it in time for the holidays. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to see you until after the holidays. So happy holidays
happy
to you.
Happy holidays.
And thank you again for another wonderful year of being a very valuable contributor to this program, Siobhan.
This is always my delightful hour of the week. I love it. Such good questions.
Well, thank you so much, Siobhan, for being a part of it. And thank you guys for being a part of it as well. We'd love to get your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. You can always leave those anytime. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Until next time, for Siobhan, for Todd, for Stacy, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook, you know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap. Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right here, right
now. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.